Okay, welcome everyone for the Tuesday English Medium discussion. So we are on a theme for the moment with the Dvaitanupassana Sutta found in the Sutta Nipata. So we are taking time for that. But before going to that, I would like to inform others, those who are participating. If you have any question or if you have any report or any suggestion, please present it. If there are no, or after finishing that, we are going to go to the Dvaitanupassana Sutta, the continuation from the last time. So before going to that, please, if there are any question or any remark, it is time for you.
Avasarai Bante, we have not received any reports from Zoom for this week, Bante. Avasarai.
Okay, thank you, Ari. So from here also, there are no questions, so we can go to the book.
Okay, so today we're going on to the 16th and last of these dyads. If bhikkhus, there are those who ask, could there be correct contemplation of dyads in some other way? You should answer them thus, there could be. And how could there be? In this world, bhikkhus, with its devas, mara and brahma, with this population, with its ascetics and brahmins, its devas and humans, that which is regarded as this is happiness, the noble ones have seen well with correct wisdom, thus this is suffering. This is one contemplation. In this world, bhikkhus, with its devas, maras and brahma, with this population, with its ascetics and brahmins, its devas and humans, that which is regarded as this is suffering, the noble ones have seen well, with correct wisdom, thus this is happiness. This is a second contemplation. When a bhikkhu dwells thus correctly contemplating a dyad, heedful, ardent and resolute, one of two fruits is to be expected of him, either final knowledge in this very life, or if there is a residue of clinging, the state of non-returning. This is what the Blessed One said. Having said this, the Fortunate One, the teacher, further said this. Forms, sounds, tastes, odors, textures, and objects of mind, all are desirable, lovely, agreeable, so long as it is said they are. These are considered as happiness in the world with its deva, with these. When these cease, they consider suffering. The noble ones having seen as happiness, the ceasing of the personal entity, running counter to the entire world, is this insight of those who are, of those who see. What others speak of as happiness, the noble ones speak of as suffering. What others speak of as suffering, the noble ones have known as happiness. Behold this Dhamma hard to comprehend. Here the foolish are bewildered. There is gloom for those who are blocked, darkness for those who do not see. But for the good it is opened up, like light for those who see. The brutes unskillful in the Dhamma do not understand it even when close. This Dhamma is not easily understood by those afflicted by lust for existence, by those flowing in the stream of existence, deeply mired in Mara's realm. Who else, apart from the noble ones, are able to understand this state? When they have correctly known that state, those without influxes attain Nibbana. This is what the Blessed One said. Elated, those bhikkhus delighted in the Blessed One's statement. And when this discourse had been spoken, the minds of 60 arahants were liberated from the influxes by non-clinging. So again, we come to another remarkable point that the Buddha is making here, which is on suffering and happiness as a dyad. So again, suffering is a part of the dependent origination. So we see here that the sutta continues its linking to dependent origination. So in dependent origination, in particular, the last part of the dependent origination emphasizes birth, decay, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair as gross manifestations of suffering itself. So we take these sufferings in life as normal. You know, if somebody is sick, if somebody is in decline, if somebody is aging, you know, we will say to somebody who's old, "Oh, you look so well." Or, you know, when somebody is born, we're very excited. But in reality, this is the beginning of suffering is birth. And old age is associated with illness and pains, or decline in physical ability, or maybe a change in prospects, or an orientation, a change in, you know, what I hope to do, what my aspirations are, my outlook on life. That's not to say that older people are unhappy. I think generally older people are quite happy, but it is nevertheless a suffering to age. And when people come to the temple, we like to say Ayuwano Sukhang Balang, you know, that we encourage that people live a long life, and we hope that they have strength and so forth. And in these days we can have maybe a good a relatively long life. Last week I was looking at the mortality rates for Sri Lanka, and they're quite comparable to many other first so-called developing world countries, like in Europe. So here at the moment, it's something like 77 years for the mortality rate here in Sri Lanka, which is actually similar to my home country, Ireland, and is better than the USA. So we can live a reasonably long life, and maybe now more and more there's a focus on the quality of life. How well are you living a long life? But nevertheless, no matter how much effort we put in, there is suffering associated with aging. And so it isn't somehow these gross aspects of suffering, we diminish, we make them small. You know, that it's normal. It's normal for somebody to be getting old. It's normal for somebody to be sick. It's normal for somebody to be injured. You know, we diminish. We don't take it as significant, but indeed, it was these qualities that that originally struck the Bodhisattva to encourage him to put in the final effort to become the Buddha. That he needed to see these signs of old, sick, and dying, which he had been protected from when he was a youth. So we dismiss these things. We don't see them in our own lives. And a friend of mine who works a lot in palliative care was really having a difficult time last year because of the situation with COVID and people dying in palliative care, dying in hospital without family able to, you know, come and visit. And at the same time in society, people were diminishing, saying, you know, this COVID isn't very serious. But in reality, within the hospitals and these palliative centers, they were collapsing. And also the associated medical staff were also under tremendous pressure. And they were often the only witness to somebody dying and passing away. Or, you know, people would be FaceTiming or using Zoom or something like that to try to be with their loved one even when in their passing away. So we can really try to cover over, you know, when you go to see a funeral in the West, it looks like somebody in their best clothes and they're wearing makeup and they look very well. And people like to stand around the dead body and say, "Oh, look how well they look." And we really like to make death somehow not ugly. You know, we try to guard ourselves or delude ourselves from the seriousness that in every life there will be a death. So we think, well, now we have to make the most of this life. We have to really have as much, you know, sex, drugs and rock and roll as possible. So again, I was talking, contacting some friends, and they were telling, I was asking them, how are things now that this coronavirus is passing away, or, you know, in some areas where they have a lot of vaccination and so on happening. And he said, you know, people are just going crazy, you know, just hedonic pleasure everywhere. This is what he was telling me. And I said, oh, really? You know, so, you know, is this it? We survive a pandemic, and the goal is then to maximize our pleasure. So you can see here why the Buddha keeps referring to what ordinary people consider pleasure, the wise consider as suffering. And what the wise consider as pleasure, the ordinary people consider as suffering. So in our training as monks, we're, you know, encouraged, you know, in a suitable situation when you're well established in the Dhamma to maybe contemplate death. And we have various different meditations and so forth that are practiced. Especially, you need to be quite stable in your own mind and in your own heart before you take on these kind of practices. But we do it to bring death, an immediacy to death. And many monks practice with this idea that the end of the day is the end of their life, and the next day is like a new birth again. And to give this impetus to their practice, to give to not waste time, to not distract oneself thinking about like hedonic pleasure, like, oh, I could be doing something else. I could be I could be playing, or I could be just indulging myself. And there's an idea that if we're not having pleasant experiences, indulging experiences, or sometimes people call them like a bucket list, getting through my bucket list of pleasurable things or notable things to do in a life, then I haven't lived a life. But these goals are not serious goals. They're superficial as far as samsara, as far as rebirth is concerned, because they're not tackling the problem. They're not tackling delusion itself. So when we get out of these wild oscillations between greed and hate, then we start to move into the oscillation around delusion. So when we're in a good situation, we often can waste our time, the good opportunity, the good health. As I often encourage people that know me, I'll often say, make hay while the sun is shining. You know, if you're in a good situation, if you have sunshiny days, make hay. You know, people often want to do spiritual work or psychological work when they have a gun to their head. You know, when their partner wants to divorce them, or when their children are not happy to see them anymore, or something like that, where they're very upset about things, then they want to do spiritual work. But when everything is going smooth and going well, they're not interested in spiritual work. They're like, oh, I think I need to do my bucket list. I think I need to go on a cruise. And I've always had an imperative in my own heart to strive in the Dhamma, and to, you know, I never had any interest in going to the beach or going to some sports, you know, or going to some like entertainment centers and things like that. I just thought it was a waste of time. Personally, I was much more interested to go to meditation retreats. And but there is a pleasure, fortunately, in meditation retreats, and it's a lovely pleasure too. So we're not asked to do painful things. We're asked to just practice the Dhamma, and as we practice the Dhamma, we find that it is a visuddhi magga. It is a one that removes thorns, and there are different kinds of thorns. There's the physical thorns and the mental thorns, and to be able to uproot the mental thorns from one's heart is a great relief in suffering. And it's quite nice if you can have, you know, some stages of maturity arising, where you realize, in the past, this would have upset me a lot. And now I have more equanimity, or I have more peacefulness, I have more calm of mind around this situation or these behaviors, whatever in the past would have been triggering or painful. So that's can be quite satisfying to see the result or the fruit of this kind of spiritual work. So in this way, the wise see happiness in what ordinary people see as painful. So anyway, I'll turn it over to Venerable Dhammajiva. I've given long enough an introduction to this section this week.
So the end of the
I didn't version. Mention the Four Noble Truths, which is all I'll leave to.
The 16th version, there are 16 versions, the Buddha says, the people can misunderstand. Each time what the Aryans understand is completely negated by common beings. Whatever the common beings understood, completely negated by Aryans. That is called Tupsiturvidam. So we are in between. We are not completely ignorant. We are not completely enlightened. So this sermon is much meaningful for us, because at times we behave like a Andaputujana, the blind citizens. Sometimes at least we try to live up to arahants, so we can understand bipolar. We can see duality, and that is bipolar disease is the same. So the duality is like a pendulum, coming from the one extreme to the other, is always running with the same time gap. Each and every pendulum has its own time, whether it's going to the furthest or halfway, it is the same time. That is the Isaac Newton found in the pendulum, like a candle holder in the church. Then he started the clock. But no one knows the pendulum rests at the center. That's the point. Pendulum is a fast moving. It appears like stopping at the end. So we are waiting to go to the end, because its speed is reducing, and try to stop like, but never ends. It's only stopping at the fastest moment, fastest place, and that is being taught in the pendulum like action and the direct action, how the speed is working. Very interesting. So likewise, the Buddha says, once you see all the three, the sin, the other end, and the center, Advaita says, forget about the two extremes and catch the center. Buddha says, forget about the extreme with respect to the center and give up that also. So that is much radical, very difficult to discern, but you can deduce. But the last one is anatta niyatta manani patalokan sadevakam. Nivittang nama rupasmi, nivittang nama rupasmi, idang satchanti manjati. The full of phenomena, full of materiality, meant that one clump, we consider as myself. This is my nama rupa. Whatever we selected, we are get obsessed with. We are measuring, analyzing. We do not know, by selecting this amount of nama rupa, we ignorant about the rest of the world. That's the thing by this concept of nama rupa. But what we selected itself, very difficult to comprehend. Which one is rupa part, which one is nama part. So many people are arguing. But the idea is, by selecting that, you have rejected the rest of the world. Rest of the world changing, suffering, anatta, no problem, because unconcerned. Your suffering is related to what you selected as me, mine and myself. That is called namarupa. That namarupa, you can analyze it and go and see, there is no atta. They are also changing, just like unselected part. And difference is, unselected part never inflicts suffering. Your selected part is inflicting suffering. So that is the ignorance we don't know. We are bogged down, we are analyzing, we are obsessed with what is selected, because this is my selection. This is my happiness, my hobby, my love. The Buddha says, whenever you selected, you have tatra tatra abhinandani, you happily or unhappily get obsessed with that, so that you get blindfolded. So your friend must be there to tell you, hey darling, now you are blind, you are with the blinkers, you are talking this, but the world is bigger than that. What you selected is your criterion, that is your selection. Let me have another selection. I am also in the wrong stand, but it is opposing or different from your stand. So therefore, I have selected not your Namarupa. My Namarupa is different. But both of us must understand we are both blind. Blind from different viewpoints. So therefore, presently the term Namarupa is not given, I think, the deserved understanding. This particular sutta, it says, Anattani attamanani. Everything is anatta, but you think this breath is my breath. This rising and falling is my. And this is mine. This is myself. And this is the only part inflicting suffering. And if you know by selecting this how much you have neglected, how much you have foregone, they are not creating suffering. They may be creating suffering to the others. Yeah, who cares? It's unconcerned. So this part we can understand. Therefore, by looking at the thing, you must understand how much it is covering up. Very tiny part is enough to cover up the whole world. That part you taken as the pivotal value or benchmark or the kammatthana is the cause of suffering. Of course, it is less. But if you think that kammatthana is mine, that liberal, the reference point is mine, this temporary benchmark is mine, that is what the Buddha is laughing at. So therefore, Namarupa, for the last retreat, they selected the Mahalukya Buddha Sutta. Then the Buddha is asking, do you know the shackles? 10 shakals, 5 shakals, Sakkaya Ditta Vichikicca, Silabhata Paramasa, Kamaraga, Ruparaga. Anyone who remember that I have mentioned? Then Malankiputra is raising high, says, yes, I know. Sakkaya Ditta Vichikicca, Silabhata Paramasa, Kamaraga, Patika. I have mentioned it to many people. You remember which one's sermon? Then Malankiputra, you can understand what it is. Then the Buddha says, I can tell you, the learned people will laugh at you, just like the other followers, because imagine a young child, the toddler, they don't have Sakkaya Ditti, because they don't know their body. They don't have Vichikicca, because they don't know Dhamma. It's a sarcastic, the only people who are arguing only knows Dhamma. Other people never argue, they don't know Vichikicca. The Buddha says they don't know Dhamma, no Vichikicca. And Sakkaya Ditta Vichikicca, Silabhata Paramasa. They don't have Sila, there is no Silabhata Paramasa. There is no Kama, there is no Kama Raga. There is no Satta, animal being, so there is no hatred. So Buddha says this young child, you took the example of the dying person, the elderly person, but this is very open. And they don't have 5 shackles, but they don't know. No benefits. So don't talk blindfold, what the Buddha says. To whom I have mentioned about the Panchorambhagya Sangyojana, that the 5 shackles, and accordingly you have to explain. Then Venerable Anand is asking Bhante, please, out of compassion, please let me. Then he says, how valuable to have ditthi. Then only you can get rid of ditti. Without understanding ditti, young child, they don't have ditti. So how can they get rid of? No. But we bloody fellows, we have ditti. So we have to appreciate we have ditti, so we can do, we can understand Sakkaya ditti and get rid of that, because we suffer from the ditti and we have to understand with due weight, and we can see it is disappearing. And we know little part half knowledge of Dhamma. So much so we are agitated. Dhamma is not for agitation, but half learned Dhamma is the reason for agitation, vichikicca. So you know now what you have to do. You can unlearn it, you have to go beyond it. finish the Dhamma. And they know Ujjagicca. And Sila, Bhata Parama. Those who have Sila always look down others. And earlier we even know with Sila, once we're born and after 6 years, you can't have a vow. You can't have a determination, no restraint. So at that time, no Sila Bhata Parama, so no one can find a fault with you and you can go to the court against you because you are a youngster. Even the legally you are safe because no Sila. Now why if it is so Sila, if Sila is going to give Sila Bhata Parama, so why the Buddha is recommending Sila? You can understand the gravity of it and you can go beyond it. That is how the Sila creates Sila Bhata Paramasa. Sila Bhata Paramasa can be, you can see beyond. And Kamarag also, young child, they don't have. And the dying person also may not have. But they don't know. Because they have not lived the life with mindfulness. Then you can understand Raga is very important for the life. That is why the beautification and cosmetics and young boys and young girls and the cars, important. When you are living there, you can understand you are not a saint. You have your due desire. But they are luxuries you have. You need the basic needs. And then you can understand how to get rid of not the karma, but the karma raga. Patiga, very interesting. The Buddha says, if you have the living animals or sattva notion, then not the patiga happen. You are hating other living beings. You never hate the material. You can't take revenge. You hate a living being. And then only, patiga means you have to go beyond, I am not a being. I am not a self. As far as I am self, I see other selves. But understanding others, one day you will configure it. Soon you have this discrimination, the suffering. So am I? Who am I? Am I a being? Or to fight against the other person and this kind of thing, then you are suffering. So this is the way my being, myself, is always up to argumenting and kind of thing because to reinforce my being, I like this, I don't like this. So other person will come and say, darling, you have your own rights, no problem. I have my own rights, so we can live together. We can agree up to disagree, no problem. Then self can't live. Then patika cannot have. So then the Buddha is telling what is the path, understanding the child has no 5 sanyojanas, but later, when he is living, when you come up to the age, all the 5 comes because of association. And then you can understand getting rid of it, the reduce friction. So without having a friction right from the beginning, Buddha never accept you as a practitioner. You never accept as your pragmatic answer. They are theoretical answers. So that argument, the child cannot argue and say, I had Sakkaya Ditti and got rid of. No. But we, living in this bloody mad world, understand how is the Sakkaya Ditti, when is happening, with whom I have, all the kind of thing. And that is the way to get rid of. So therefore, anattani atta manani pathalokan sadevakan. So in this world, we selected one part is me. We are Sinhalese Buddhists. Oh, this body is mine. And you see, that part is only one suffering. Creating suffering. That is called Namarupa. So it's a kind of a radical reflection, radical understanding about the Namarupa. Don't analyze Namarupa and see. By selecting Namarupa, you are in a bog. So by understanding, you go to the Aryan world. Don't recognize, this is me, this is mine. You have to recognize, you have to understand, this is the recognition. Can you disavow it? Can I disclaim it? Then in such a case, we can understand in meditation, we are in a limitless situation, unbound situation. Under such circumstances, our rational mind come and say, what to do next? What should I do the next? Am I in a samatha or vipassana? Am I progress or regress? So this is the way defilements are arising. The Buddha says, yena yena imanyati tato tanghoti anyata. Whenever you are going to think about that, mental proliferation, that your samadhi will be destroyed. Your mindfulness will be destroyed. And that part is almost like quantum physics. Whenever you focus attention, you create outside world, you create yourself, and you create your own bubble. They put it outside, we can understand the Schrodinger energy wave collapses into matter whenever consciousness interact. If there is no consciousness, they will never collapse into matter. They will just be passed away. So this is how the Buddha is going to give the way out. Don't do manjana. Don't do mental proliferation. Do touch and see. Do under the nose experience. Do as it is, things as they are. So you have to select very tiny part that is the benchmark of the jyoti of the light and just see what is the nama rupa there. You have to understand by selecting that you are forgetting about the world, you are idiot. But see that. And that is also disappearing. Even the unselected part also, if you focus attention, yes, that is the phenomena. But in this very life, you can't do it because it's just so big. So you select one part. Therefore, nama rupa is yes and possible and positive in putujjana. Nama rupa is nothing to the Aryans. So as far as you have nama rupa is yes, you can fight against. It is good, bad, long, short, justifiable, many. But if there is, it is nothing, no argumenting. So therefore, don't go to that argumenting by going that you select nama rupa, you accept nama rupa, you accept idiotness, you accept your atta. But you have to understand with the limited definition, we can dialogue, we can have an argument, but it won't lead to sati, it won't lead to simplicity. So I call innocence. Innocence is that why we select nama rupa. Why I become a UNP, or become a Sri Lanka, or the pro-government, or anti-government, there is no necessity. They will say, you must know who is the president, you must know who is the prime minister, minister. Not necessarily. They will teach you, but it is not a must. So therefore, disavow. Don't understand yourself, or don't recognize yourself, this and that. Soon you understand manjana can happen. So when someone is with manjana, it is my prime duty, understand this as a manjana, that is mental proliferation. And if possible, to let him know by becoming a mirror, you are in a hypothesis, endless. But instead, why can't we come into the here and now? No fighting. No vichikicca, because you have no Dhamma. If Dhamma is there, vichikicca, so therefore I would like to open the argument or the discussion or the dialogue openly on what nama rupa we are talking, we have to define first. Then very easy for us, what is his blinkers are? What are the limiting factors? Because as far as he and me knows, discussion is fair. But if we are confined to his own or her own limitations, first and foremost, we have to define what we are talking about. And then we can understand we are talking outside. We are talking unwanted muck. That simply happens is you are not simply mindful. You are not simply here and now. But I will sum up by simply be mindful, you are not enlightened. That's a way for to understand things as they are, yathabhuta jnana. So that is called bhavana. I would say rather mindfulness. So I would like to sum up my remarks in a way of opening the dialogue.
So another important point about this discussion on suffering is of course that it is the first of the Four Noble Truths. So dependent origination is ending with an emphasis on suffering, but the Four Noble Truths start with an emphasis on suffering. So there is the dukkha satcha, the truth of suffering, and then the cause of suffering, the end of suffering, and the way out of suffering. So again, it's significant that the Buddha always really has to bring a conversation back to the Four Noble Truths. So within this sutta, we see a real depth of, this is a very deep sutta, where we have dependent origination, we have Four Noble Truths being discussed and mentioned. And obviously the Buddha puts an emphasis on linking how the suffering is arising at the six sense doors, form, sounds, tastes, odors, textures, and objects of mind. All are desirable, lovely, and agreeable. So again, these are the exact same things that, that as I mentioned earlier on, people try to have the finest forms, the finest sounds, tastes, odors, textures, and objects of mind. And this is called living the good life, is if you have the best, or you have choice of these objects, all desirable, all lovely, all agreeable, and this is heaven here and now. However, the teaching of the Buddha is not about how to, I mean, if you read what the Buddha is saying, you can understand clearly how to live here and now in a maximum way, in a heavenly way. It's very clear, but the Buddha is unfortunately saying that this is very temporary, and that we have an ultimate suffering that is coming in the form of old age, sickness, and death. And that this is the problem, and going from, and that might be okay if it was just one life, but unfortunately we have a rounds of rebirth. And it's kind of interesting when I listen to people who criticize Buddhism, that they really miss this point. They when people undermine and criticize religion or spiritual work as pointless, because we don't generate beautiful forms, sounds, tastes, odors, textures, and objects of mind, or that we diminish these things, because you know most people are very busy trying to obtain or produce or associate with forms, sounds, tastes, odors, textures, and objects of mind that are desirable, agreeable, and lovely. And so if we come along and say that's not the ultimate goal, or that is just a suffering in a nice package, then we sound like we're just cold water being thrown on the fire. And instead we're pointing towards relief from ultimate suffering, which is the rounds of rebirth itself, and the mechanism of karma operating, and how this karma is related to our defilements, and how living a good moral life, a generous life, and a life that is dedicated to cultivation of bhavana, of meditation, or of also right view, right attitude, then we can diminish our ultimate suffering. And again, if I look into my own life, I just see that I become more and more stable over time, and more and more content. And this, looking back on this past year of this coronavirus, where, you know, we were confined here to the monastery for the last year and a half, then it wasn't a great suffering. When I see that others are confined to their homes or something like that, you know, and then they are talking about how their freedom is being diminished, that they can't leave their house, and you know, it's not a bad life that they have, but they view it as suffering. And now that they have freedom, then I ask them, well, what are you doing now that you have freedom? And it's like, not much change, really, not much different. They still go back to their house every night. And so I wonder about, I'm quite content in my practice that my pleasure is an internal pleasure, or there's not an instability in my mind. You know, that I know that if suffering is arising in my mind, it's more internal. It's more within what's happening within my skin itself, rather than what's happening outside in the world. And even if something is going on in the world, it's how am I processing what's happening in the world outside of me? Am I taking it into my heart? Am I taking it seriously? Or do I view it as entertainment in some way? So this rooting up of suffering is a very deep spiritual work. And even if you have the fortune to live a very wealthy life, a life where there's no inhibition, there's no challenge to you having the best of form, sounds, tastes, odors, textures and objects of mind, know that death is on the way. And that this life is short, and that samsara is very long. And this is this dukkha satcha, this truth of suffering, is a very deep suffering, a very deep truth to understand and comprehend. It's not just ordinary, mundane suffering. It's not just the suffering of whether my life is meaningless or meaningful. But you know, it's that I will be bounced out of this life into another life again and again and again, and it's like a lottery whether you have a good life or a bad life after that. You know, you will just fare according to your karma. So that's very humbling if you take a long look at our passage through rebirth, and that even the good things that we enjoy in this life are a product of our past good karma. And then it's quite humbling. One should strive to find one's way out of this this suffering nature, this suffering existence. And when I hear people like diminish this effort of striving to find a release from suffering, then it's very pale what they have to offer instead. They have hedonic pleasure. Why do you want to live in, or spend time in the monastery? Why don't you just come with us to the beach or to the some entertainment, or we'll go to the restaurant or something like that, as if this is really, you know, a great blessing. But it isn't, you know, and it becomes very very boring, very fast, very tedious. Whereas within the realms of the Dhamma meditation, you can spend hours and hours and hours meditating and very happy and very peaceful and very content and very calm and very peaceful. And all of these kind of positive qualities of mind are not experienced by people so much. You know, they're very rarefied, they're very beautiful. And the pleasures within the realm of the Dhamma are not common kinds of pleasures. They're not on demand. They're not just available for money. You have to kind of earn them, and they're self-generated. You have to produce them yourself. You can't just pay somebody else for them, and that makes it the responsibility comes back onto myself. You know, am I doing my own duty, and am I following the Dhamma? And if I do, I come to its own fruit according to my capacity, according to my karma. I will come to my own benefits. And it's kind of fair. You know, we say that karma is unfair, but karma is very fair. And what we put in is what we get out to some degree. And that's fair, you know. And so, you know, this to end this sutta with this whole topic of suffering is to really end on a very deep teaching again, and it's one we should consider quite carefully.
So there are no remarks. So I would like to. Yesterday also I presented it, and it's a very revealing, just like taking the young child, very young child. Do not have defilements, I mean, vitikkama and pariyutthana, but they do not know, therefore no benefits. Therefore, not having defilement is one thing, and very understanding then and there is the what, you get the due benefits. So, it same thing presented in a very, as a research, the Ms. Tenakon presented last time when I go to Kadwela, and she sent me the abstract, so I asked her to give a review. She has done a social survey with 10 children, new mindfulness before corona, and 10 children, same age, same sex, was not prepared with mindfulness, but they are also exposed to the corona situation, not the disease, social situation. So she put a
social survey questions, and she told all the 20 children were happy because corona came, parents are at home. This is the first time in the world. Other places, the torturing of the children increases and they are deprived of the going out and kind of thing. So I interrupted her and told that in Japan, in China and others, they have found that divorce cases are increasing, child abuse and parents are torturing some. So that is what Bandhi, it's very important. But it is not related to sati. It is not related to the mindfulness, because both the control group as well as the others, this is we are happy. Basically, father is at home. I think this is cultural pattern in Sri Lanka because we have no single parent children. Often they have both. But father is the one always not at home. But now the situation is different. But they appointed father is at home. Then while I am commenting, she told Bante, just wait. There is a very significant difference between the mindful children and unmindful children. So I was very eagerly listening, and she was an expert on the testimonies. And she says the 10 people, those who were mindful, presented their remarks, their answers, very sweet language. The other 10, they were not using the sweet language. So it was striking. I told that is what the glad game. You must try to find a reason to be glad under any circumstances. Whatever it happened, you are presenting in a very, very contented vocabulary, contented way of presenting, not worrying about the others and this and that. That is what the Manopubbangama Dhamma, Manosetta Manomya, Manasache Pasannena, Bhasativa Karotiva, Tato Nan Sukhamangveti, Chayava Anapayini. Whatever it happened, find a reason to be glad. Then you are in happiness. But if you find a reason to be sorry, the worry, sorry, even if you are in a happy situation, you are sorry. So that make always space for me. Everywhere I go, everyone talk with me, I find their main hobby is worrying. I think main thing is not to worry. Do whatever you do. Tell whatever you tell. And present it in such a way that others must feel it is not imposing something. You are presenting in a lovable language. You talk with the, you know, the love spots. You know how to present it. So therefore, nowadays in the media, the presenter, he do not know the subject. Anyway, he take highest money because he know the gloss over. He know the use sweet words. But these children, I think 13 to 18 or something like that, she mentioned about the age group. Whenever they are reporting with poetic language, aesthetic language. Everything put it in a very harmonious way. Then I told that is very significant because the world is suffering and the media and the government is making fuss. Telling a serious disease. This version is worse than this. When you are to open the telephone, open the media, open this, talking. And Boris Johnson says, I mean, you take care about your health, I am going to open the country. Don't believe the government can save your say health. They have soon opened, they go party. They go and go to the brothel. So how the hell government can do it? He says, oh, mind your own business. And Sri Lanka also the same. This is, we are not going to open. So I saw today also email, government doing completely opposite. They have to restrict people. Who the hell can restrict? He must say, oh, she must understand their own health. I mean, health devices are there. But if they want to go to a restaurant and the beach, go and have your health. And even then I says, If he or she is not worrying about the corona, government can do nothing. That is why the West and the Australia are protesting like hell. Don't touch our life. Corona is separate issues. You are going to do. So therefore, if they are going, ultimately confronted with the police. But in Sri Lanka also we have. Sri Lankan police is going and crashing it. I saw it is worst in UK. Remove the clothes and manhandling female. With they are protesting in the street. That is, government has limits. Corona has limits. I have my own limits. I must understand what the hell organization can do, because organization create corona and never cure corona. Therefore, you must have your distance. And Buddha mentioned before corona. So my question was, how someone can look at the corona or this endemic or epidemic situation, be with mindful setup and without mindful setup. Then I have a question from the mindful family, mindful school point of view. Is it too late now to be mindful? Never too late. That's why we are doing this kind of a research, this kind of a testimonial, and we are going to publish it. So if you are with mindfulness, even the corona is good. Only maybe the Sri Lankan children. Other children may not be, because it is our something cultural. But we can advertise it. We can market it, because all the other children, they are not. But I heard a Mirigama in the school, 5 children committed suicide. And yesterday came the Kirindivala, one headmistress, she told, not my school, but the other school also, he got 9 A's in the exam, competitive exam. Next day, hanged to death. And only reason is the mother removed the cell phone. And you see, it's a viral. So we may have life expectancy. We may have GPS. We may have the gross national production. But this death rate and the prostitution and the social collapse, I mean, very difficult to reduce to one criterion. But anyway, the corona situation give a different perspective for us to think. Don't believe on organization. Mind your own business. You have to mind your business. Be mindful. Don't associate people. Don't have interaction, intimation. If at all, do it with your due precautions. But it is good because you have more time for sitting and walking. If you organize your life. Therefore, I told, after long email I told, so Nisthanamani also we started an open retreat. Everyone is against. But I just wanted to have one because we can go for 25. We have about 15 people. I told him to inform all the health organizations and see. But everyone says stop. I told, okay, we'll stop it. But this is the only answer, not the vaccine. This is the only answer. So therefore, at least we must have the virtual retreats. But if the face-to-face is more effective, we have to do. But we are not violating the social norms. But the social norms won't give an answer. They give a kind of a reaction. But individually, we have an answer. So therefore, we must know Buddha can teach and we can interpret it. But whatever may be, if we know I am with the germs, or I am without soap, now I am going to touch my face and it's going to infest, I think it's good. Even then, if you get the corona, it's good, rather than thinking that you are without corona. And if you get vaccine, there's an argument they become a more carriers of the germ. Because their propagation is higher than the unvaccinated people, because they behave very happily. And the president says in the UK, even with the vaccine, you must have the mask. And the person asks, the only mask is enough? President says, yes. The other person says, vaccine is yes. Everyone says both is the better. I mean, so do we need an expert to tell that? They are bankrupt. When in front of the mic, they have to tell something. When what they are telling is contradictory to the technology, contradictory to the rational linear thinking. But I am not thinking you to just to be limited to the limited linear thinking. You can have it. So therefore, answer is be on the ball, be here and now. So understand how much area you select as my namarupa. You can't take the whole world, one thing. And the second thing is you can't live without selecting namarupa because you are a very vulnerable person. And therefore understand your selection, your baby, and that is the only thing going to give suffering. If it is reducing, less suffering. If it's increasing, higher suffering. So therefore, if you know the limit of your namarupa with the respect to the relative understanding with your fellow meditators as well as your mindfulness, you understand your territory. The technology is to increase the territory, going to the moon and the Saturn and all the blah, blah, blah. Buddha says, go introvert and come to the superficial mind, to the interior mind, which is not related to the senses. And then the consciousness comes to a state where consciousness exists, can exist, without related to the senses. And that part, science says, as a mystic. But the Buddha says that is your real home. That's why Buddha says when the Arya, they reject all the what the science is. Science rejects Aryans. They can't measure. But we being meditators, we are happy. We must be expert on the science. Very, very expert with the Arahant's words and understand we are Avi. What is your reference point? What is your pivotal point? Ask the other person, they will say you are wrong. No problem. Because he is not killing us, he is just indicating us. So everyone, meditators, are indicators or mirrors, and your mindfulness is the, ultimately once it come up to a certain steadfast mindfulness, it won't arrive at a decision quickly. It is applying again and again and deduce and slowly, slowly precipitate the correct decision. So therefore we are not going to decide overnight or by one sutta or one discussion. But we are advancing. That much I can say. We are advancing thanks to Corona. Okay, time is up. But thing is that next week we don't know what is the topic. I think this sutta is over. Can someone come out with a proposal for the tomorrow, next week, or we still without a proposal also we can do? Okay, we go without a decision. Thank you very much for the participation. Sukhi hantu.